So, what do you know about acclaimed documentary filmmaker Ken Burns?
Lots of them. Lots of them. Lots. I love Ken Burns. I think he's great. He's fabulous.
What's funny though about you saying that is when I was looking him up today, his younger brother Rick Burns is also a documentarian, so that kind of is appropriate. There is lots of Burnses all over the place making documentaries.
Okay, I don't think I know about a Rick Burns.
Yeah, he's a lot less famous. Like on his Wikipedia page, the a lot of his like more recent movies don't have their own entries and stuff. Ken is he's the superstar of the family, but I thought that was interesting though, just apropos of nothing that his brother's also a documentarian. So yeah, I know the name, but it's one of these guys that I don't know that I've ever seen one of his documentaries. I just know of him and mostly from parodies, like SNL sketches and stuff about the
Oh, and of
Civil
course,
War.
The Simpsons. He must be on Simpsons.
It's always like, "My dearest Martha, I hope this letter finds you well and not in the hands of the hated Dutch," or whatever. And the slow pan across the sepia picture. So that's where I feel like I've seen a Ken Burns movie, even though I never have. But I got a Ken Burns movie for us this week because this happened when, so last summer I was visiting Jeju Island in South Korea, and I walked around the whole thing, walked the whole 200K around the island. Which obviously wasn't that hard to do because, it's an island. There's
Now
a
let's
sh
clear this up. You didn't do it all in one day. Let's get that clear.
Right.
Took you a little while.
I didn't even do it all continuously. I took a bus home to my hotel every
I just don't
day.
want anybody to think you're the Wonder Boy who can walk 200K in one day.
Yeah, no, the opposite. I got stranded one time when I missed the bus, and it's like, wow, like I could walk until the sun comes up and I won't be back. So, yeah, no, it was an easy journey, which, yeah, is like the opposite of what we're going to watch today. Not only was it easy because I had buses to take me back to my hotel every day, but you can't really get too lost because the water's right there, you're just walking along the shoreline. But even in that sense, there was still like all these little arrows I had to follow and detours and go this way, and like it was still relatively complicated, or sort of like this is going to blow this out of the water, the thing we're going to watch now. But as I was doing that while I was on Jeju, I became aware of this Ken Burns film from 2003 called Horatio's Drive, America's First Road Trip. And this was in 1903, the first guy to drive all the way from coast to coast when there were no highways. Like every part of America, it did connect, but every part was just its own community with its own twisty, weird
Yeah,
streets.
so you might have walking, boat, maybe a
I
little bit of
think.
train.
No, I think he did do it in a car the whole way, but there was no straight road. I mean, like
Oh,
every.
okay.
Like, just today we were complaining about the suburbs and how twisty they are. So just imagine that across the entire country. Like everything was just each community's.
Well, I haven't heard of Horatio's Road Trip, but anybody who is a public broadcasting fan would know Ken Burns.
Right.
And he did shows on baseball, the Brooklyn Bridge, the Civil War, World War II, great one a few years back on the development of country music in the United States. Fabulous.
He did one on jazz too, right? His
Oh,
jazz one's pretty famous.
yeah. Oh, he's amazing.
Cool. Well, I'm glad to finally check him out. So yeah, Horatio's Drive is what I got for us. And I don't have a ton of info about this because there's not really much to say. It's Horatio's Drive is a 2003 documentary film directed by Ken Burns, written by Dayton Duncan. Its subject is the first cross-country automobile journey in the United States, which occurred during the summer of 1903. The documentary focuses primarily on Horatio Nelson Jackson and his Winton car, the Vermont, along with his companions, Sewell K. Crocker, his pet pit bull Bud, and frequent correspondence with Jackson's wife, Bertha Richardson Wells. So maybe we will get, "My dearest Bertha, I send you
All right.
this."
That's from the Civil War.
All right.
Now, this reminds me of how we had been watching All Creatures Great and Small, the early first versions of it. Those two guys, the two vets, did a road trip in Britain where they drove around the Dales, which is the setting for All Creatures Great and Small, in a
Oh.
vintage motor car from 1923 or 1924 or something. And it's a riot.
That
It's
sounds good. I was going to
just a
say, oh,
riot.
so you mean the actual actors? This was
The
not
action, no, yeah,
a.
this is the actors, and they set off somewhere up in perhaps, let's say, Edinburgh, and then they come down from Scotland and they drive around on the Dales to these places that were parts of the setting when they made the movies, the TV show in the late 70s. And oh, yeah, it's great. Reminds me of that.
So yeah, since there's not much to say about this particular film because it's just one of his many movies and obviously not one of the more famous ones, but I did just look him up a little. And I still only have a little bit of info because I could go into all of it. Like there is a lot of stuff you could read up about him, but the basics are Kenneth Lorne Burns, born 1953, is an American filmmaker known for his documentary films and television series, many of which chronicle American history and culture. His work is often produced in association with the National Endowment for the Humanities and distributed by PBS. And then it went into like, you know, he got a 8mm camera when he was like 17 or something, and he worked his way into working over here and working this way and da da da, moving his way up, blah blah blah. But I thought this could kind of just this was kind of a neat little thing that I think can just streamline all of that. An interesting little bit is that Burns's mother was found to have breast cancer when he was 3, and she died when he was 11 years old, a circumstance that he said helped shape his career. He credited his psychologist father-in-law with a significant insight. So this is what his father-in-law said about him. He told me that my whole work was an attempt to make people long gone come back alive. So, yeah, you know.
And you know what? That's what he does. And he shows, I think why his shows are so successful is they don't deal with highfalutin types, although he did do a show on the Roosevelts, the three Roosevelts, Teddy and Eleanor and Franklin. So they'd be kind of higher ups. But he deals a whole lot with just normal life in America for normal people, not anybody that's big wigs or whatever. Even those shows, though, when you look at them, he brings it down to a very human level of what it's like to be part of the American experience, I guess. And I stole that little saying from the American Experience, which is a PBS show.
Nice. Well, all right. So anyway, yeah, the one we got, my first kind of a weird one maybe to start with, but I just thought that the idea of navigating across, because I always think too of it's a weird example, but Who Framed Roger Rabbit came out when I was a kid, and I didn't really follow the plot of that movie as a kid, because watching it as an adult, it's about, you know, it's set in the 40s and the 50s, and it's about a highway coming through town, and like, we can't have the highway come through. The highway is going to ruin all the small businesses and all the mom and pop gas stations and ruin the streetcar. It's going to ruin everything. And yeah, nowadays you could drive all the way from one side of America to the other in a line. You'd never have to stop. Where back then there was no line, there was no highway. Everything was just weird. And it's like that just sounds interesting. So yeah, maybe an unusual first Ken Burns movie for me to watch, but it just sounds
Hey, no,
pretty good.
I'm all for it because I hadn't heard of it, so I'm game.
Nice. So yeah, let's bring Horatio back to life. Horatio's Drive.
On the evening of May 19th, 1903, in the oak-paneled game room of the exclusive University Club in San Francisco, a group of well-to-do men were sharing drinks and conversation. The talk centered on President Theodore Roosevelt's political fortunes and the chances that the Boston Pilgrims might take the pennant in the brand new
So I think the first thing that stood out to me about that, and it stayed true the whole way through, is how similar it is to Around the World in 80 Days. Like that this guy was obviously very rich, like his $8,000 it cost ultimately, which in today's money is like $300,000. And that, you know, you have to be a man of means like that to even be able to undertake this. But at the same time, that makes you maybe not the best person for it. Like obviously his gumption was more than his technical ability. So similar to Around the World in 80 Days. Very shockingly similar, except real.
It's amazing that they did it. I mean, because they really didn't plan. They just pulled together a bunch of stuff and got in this car and said, "We're off, we're going."
Yeah.
Whereas the other fellows that were following them up didn't actually do as well as they did, but they had plans. The stuff would arrive before they got to a certain spike. These guys didn't have any plan at all like that. So when things broke down, they had to wait it out until they could order new stuff. But what an entertaining show. I mean, that's.
Yeah, I mean, just as far as Ken Burns's documentary prowess, yeah, because I was saying before we started this, like it's, you know, it's 1 hour and 46 minutes. So I was like, yeah, you know, we'll see if we get through it. We might have to split it in half. Once we started watching it, there's no question about splitting it in half. We just watched the whole thing. Like, I can't believe what an easy watch that was.
And not boring at all.
Yeah.
They just kept moving along and interesting you with, "Oh my God, what's going to happen next? Oh, I give up." My
Yeah,
God, they're not giving up. They're carrying on.
I don't think I really had my conception of how bad it would be was, yeah, was I just assumed that the hardest part would be connecting up the neighborhoods, you know, like getting from one country lane to the other, getting from one place to another where people don't usually go. But yeah, especially that early part in the mountains, like that hardly counts. That hardly counts as roads. Like they're just going up these mountain roads that barely exist, and then they gotta like ford their way through water like it is the Oregon Trail, like they're in a wagon train. It's nuts.
And how upbeat this guy is.
Yeah.
I mean, I was hearing about these disasters they were having, thinking, oh man, I'd give up. Oh man, I'd give up. But he's like, it'll be better tomorrow. We can get it fixed. And they did. And they just kept on pushing. And it was so well created. That's what I liked about it. Usually when you're watching documentaries or history stories or whatever, they get a little in the long yawn side. This didn't do that at all, ever. You were really interested in this man, and you wanted him to win. When the other two started out after him and had all the sponsorships and the money behind them and everything, I was thinking, yeah, I hope something happens to them that they don't win, because this guy really needs to win, even if he didn't plan it right. God, what a lot of guts and gumption and positive feeling, I'm gonna get ahead, and he did. And you're so pleased at the end when he makes it. It's like, yay,
And
he's my hero.
it really is like anything you can imagine that could go wrong. The only thing, I mean, I was going to say it did go wrong. The only thing that didn't was that they hit bad weather, but at least it wasn't a tornado.
Yeah, because I thought when they were going through the desert there and you saw those rainstorms and they were so black and thick, I said, uh-oh, tornado gonna hit here. But luckily, it didn't.
Yeah, so it wasn't acts of God like that. It was just the mechanical reality of these freaking cars with the long steering column, and you're sitting in the little, like almost like a leather bound armchair, but no windshield, no roof. And
No.
yeah, just this
And
broke,
you're
then that
driving
broke.
on old cattle trails for a whole lot of the country, because they were either built by the railroad in order to build the train tracks, or it was some old trail that the wagon trains had gone over or were still going over in some instances. And they're full of rocks, they're full of holes. If we think potholes nowadays are bad, man, they've got potholes that go practically to hell and back. And the car would be buried up to its axles or its battery case at one point, they said. And thank God they had a winch. So can you imagine the number of times they said in one day, there was at one point they had to winch the vehicle out of these crevices in the roads 18 times.
Yeah.
Little wonder the guy lost weight by the time he got to New York.
And just, yeah, that just almost the faith, I guess, because your directions are so scant and your knowledge of what's coming and the lack of pre-planning, just the faith that you'll even get to a place to fix the problem or get more gas or whatever. Like, it does remind me of when I hear people talk about the current day outback in Australia. Like, you got to bring your own gas. You can't assume you're going to find anyone. It seems similar. And you know, maybe not as bad as the outback, but pretty dang desolate just day
Well,
after day.
and when things happen, like they lost their gas leaked out, and they had a quarter of a tank of gas, and then some guy on a horse comes and uses his horsepower to haul the car into this little town. Well, who even knows that there's going to be a gas station there?
Yeah.
You're out in the middle of freaking nowhere.
And then when the guy had to get on a bicycle and go bike 26 miles to get gas and
And then
bike
the bike
back.
breaks down, and he's got to walk back with gas.
Yeah, and as far as the navigation stuff goes, because I even just think about, I mean, I'm just a pedestrian. I don't even have a license, but there's been plenty of times when I remember, like, one time I got out of the subway at Union Station in Toronto, major area, city I know really well, but it was so snowstormy. I walked 2 blocks the wrong way before I figured out what was going on. Like, the idea of navigating through Nevada or wherever the heck they were in a car, and just like having to take different routes because rivers are in the way, and backtracking, and like, man, that's the level of getting lost that, like,
And how
I would never.
depressing it must be. But they weren't depressed. I mean, that time when the girl told them which road to take, and they went 19 miles out of their way to a dead end. And when they had to turn around, come all the way back. So there's 38 miles that they got to travel. And she just says, oh, well, my family's down at the end of the road. They've never seen a motor car, and I wanted them to see it. That's why I told you to go that way. Like, man, wouldn't you want to strangle her nice and quick?
And maybe too, I guess, though, that is where the guy, I guess maybe I was underselling a little where, you know, I was saying he's like a Phineas Fogg type guy. But then they said, like, when World War One happened, even though he was in his 40s, he chose to enlist and he won a bunch of like war awards. And it's like, again, the choice nobody would make. Nobody would do that. But this guy would.
This is obviously a man who never, ever intended in his life to sit back and take life easy. He was an adventurer. Yes, like Phineas Fogg. He probably would go around the world in 80 days if he hadn't been doing this car run. What an amazing character.
Yeah.
And the guy that was with him, same thing. And the dog that was with him. Yeah. I mean, the dog was almost as big a hero as the two men were, riding around there with his little goggles on and minding the car. I thought that was really cute. Well, they went into, when they were almost to the East Coast by this time, I think it was in Chicago they were, and they went into the hotel to be receive the accolades, and the dog stays in the car, and you see a picture of the dog in the car, and they say he's keeping people at bay. I bet he was. Don't you touch this car, I'll bite your hand off.
Well, even though that's a very small example, but again, of this guy making strange decisions that people wouldn't make, like, he was already deep enough into the journey to know how hard it was going to be, and he still bought a dog to bring with him. Weird choice, man. Like, at every turn in this, watching it, I'm like, yeah, this could not have been me, because I wouldn't have made any of these choices. And I would have given up, like, within the first 2 weeks.
Oh, me too. Me too. I would have given up probably in the first couple of days.
Yeah,
because they just set right off, and they were having trouble right from the beginning. It's not like they drove like 2,000 miles or even 200 miles before they had their first mishap. They had the first mishap within maybe not the first day, but the second day.
Yeah.
And it was just continual every day after that. What a story.
It was also
what
cool.
A story.
It really tied together well, because earlier today, before watching this, just for our own edification, we were watching some stuff about Red Dead Redemption 2, that like super realistic cowboy video game, which takes place in 1899. So like about the same time. And yeah, it's just interesting to now see the real life thing of like these towns he was getting to. It's like, there it is. There's a Red Dead town. There's an Old West town. There's everybody and their horses
there's
coming
a developed
by.
City.
But it's still everyone like dressed like a cowboy at the saloon. Everyone's riding a horse and this guy in the car comes through and the newspaper reports on it because no one's ever seen a car before. And that one town where he just didn't have time to stop and everyone was like, oh man, he just drove past.
Drove right through, 40 miles an hour. He just drove right through. And other places where the little towns, the little communities that he was going through, and you'd see pictures of people, and they were all dressed up in their Sunday best to see the car come through. And I suppose, right, there wouldn't be a whole lot going on in your life. You'd be minding your farm or maybe minding your little village store or whatever. And, oh my God, a car is coming through. So everybody would go home and get all gussed up with their suits and the hats and the dresses and all out there waiting to see the car.
Yeah, that's, I mean, because I guess, you know, obviously North America's history is just so much in the, you know, the modern version of European style history, so much smaller and shorter than the rest of the world. But this particular part of it is definitely the most interesting part, like the Old West becoming the modern day. And yeah, I can't think of a much better example than that. This guy in his weird old timey car with no roof, driving across the Old West, like, man.
And I liked how Ken Burns and the people that worked with him drew the importance of the car into the new world. Like, they didn't show a whole lot of pictures of the new superhighways. All they mentioned was by 1950. Now we're talking 47 years later. There are major highways that cross the entire continent, so that now instead of 2 months or whatever it took them, 5 days. You're going from east to west on these super highways. But they didn't dwell on that. They didn't show the big pictures of the super highways because we've seen all those. And if you dragged it up into this century, well, the car is everywhere.
Yeah.
Like everybody's got one. It's amazing. In 100 more years, he talks about Lewis and Clark expedition in 1803. There's two guys going across with their horses from east to west. 100 years later, the introduction of the car, it goes across. Here we are, another 100 years later, and they're everywhere. They are everywhere. They really did change the whole history of the world. What I think is so successful about his filmmaking, as I tried to explain at the beginning. He doesn't just give you the facts. He really brings it down to such a personal level that you can imagine yourself being in that car and going through all of those hardships, and you can imagine how you would react when that happened. And yeah, you might give up. You might have to get out and push the car. He has a way of just, yeah, bringing it down to the level that, yeah, you feel a part of it. And I think that's why they're so successful.